When I cut him, it wasn't like cutting Jim. It was exciting, but perfunctory. Surgical. It was about Jim. It was about me wanting control again. Trust. Love. Honesty. Is it enough to say that those words have no real meaning, detached from actions and intentions? Is it enough to say, I'm sorry, now? My last date with Vince was June 13th, 1986, the day Jim was diagnosed with PCP. I was at the hospital and stayed there for the night. His body was so depleted that he needed red blood cells immediately. He'd ignored the fact that he was sick for at least 6 months. Was this the doctor in denial or the saint in the making? I watched the blood, thick and heavy concentrated plasma, drip from the plastic bag into the clear tubing through the large gauge needle into Jim's vein. I never slept with Vince again, or tied him up, or beat him, or cut him. Jim needed me. I won. I was back in his life. December 28, 1995. I sit here, running my fingers over the scars on my chest and legs. They are fading now. Most of them gone. Here or there is a line, a bump, a bit of raised flesh, perhaps wider than the surrounding flesh. I touch my flesh and pull at it. I look at the bed next to me. It's brass in need of polishing. And think of Jim. And then Walter dying in it. I look at my life and think, it's not too bad. I'm here. I'm writing this. My fingers roam my chest, pinch my nipples. I think about Jim's white, fish-belly flesh, Walter's hairy, darker skin, Vince's pliant, scarred arms. I think of Walter and Jim, and love, and trust, and where we fail and where we succeed, but sometimes, in the end, fail. Flesh is what brings us together, what joins us, and what keeps us apart. I always thought Hamlet's line was, "Oh, that this too solid flesh would melt." But someone just told me it is sullied, not solid. And that made sense. Flesh isn't solid. It isn't marble, but tender. Like truth and honesty and even love, it can be inexplicably ruptured, torn apart. It is ripe for decay on its inevitable journey to become lifeless. What we, as a last resort, call dead. Like honesty, truth, and love, it is negotiable. We can make it do what we want, sometimes. We can do to it what we want, often. We can misuse and abuse it, but we cannot deny that it is there, that it is us. I think about cutting Jim, about being cut. I feel my scars and think about cutting again. But with whom? Jim is dead. I never even talked about this with Walter. Vince is sick. We haven't spoken for a decade. Feeling my skin, I decide, one last time, to cut myself. Will it be sexual? My cock feels nothing. Would it be an experiment in remembrance? I can remember. I have remembered. Is it an easy way to end this essay? A cheap, exploitative shot? What do I feel writing this? What does my skin feel, aging as it is on its journey to death? Essay, Part 3. I've turned up the heat in the house. It is cold outside. I've made a strong cup of tea with bourbon and sugar and lemon, and have warmed myself within and without. I find the needles I saved from when Walter was sick, and look at them in their sterile paper and plastic wrappers. I forget which is thinner, 20-gauge 1 or 25-gauge 5/8. These are things I used to know. How odd to hold these slim packages in my hand. 3 years ago, I would deftly open them, remove the needle, and irrigate Walter's Hickman catheter, or flush his feeding tube with saline and heparin. 15 years ago, I would open these packages and carefully push the needle through Jim's and Vince's flesh. Which has more meaning for me now in memory? I nursed Walter, and at times even made him better. He needed me, and I was there. I gave Jim and Vince pleasure, at times even ecstatic joy. Did they need me? Could someone else have done this for them? And me? I learned. I received pleasure. I grappled with the mysteries of flesh, my own and others. I entered worlds I never dreamed existed. Of sex, of fantasy, of fear, of AIDS, of death. And I became who I am today. Oh, that this too, sullied flesh would melt. I am lying on the brass bed next to my desk. I rub my chest, my nipples, warm them with my palms. I unwrap the needle and breathe deep. I've done this before. I can do this now. I hold the tip of the needle, the thinner of the two, to the almost pink beige areola of my nipple. I breathe. I look at my chest and remember the whiteness of skin, the tension of muscle, the love of other men, their bodies, and their trust. I trusted them. And why not now? Why not myself? And then I push without thinking, without feeling, without memory. The needle slides clean and then sticks. I see the skin on the other side of the nipple, poking pointed. The needle is not broken through. I breathe and push again. There is little pain, a poke, and that is it. The tip of the needle is exposed, and its shaft emerges clean and bright. My breath comes back, and I stare at the gleaming needle. What does it mean? Have I recreated a moment from my past? Did I think this would bring back Jim or Walter? Bring back some sense of their presence, of their desire? Or is it to bring back my own desire for them? Will it ignite my passion, which feels long asleep, quietly resting in my flesh, my heart, my cock, my past? The needle feels hot. The skin surrounding it feels warm. I rotate the tiny steel rod and feel nothing. A slight pull, a tiny tug deep inside my flesh. I reach next to me and open the single-edged razor from its package. Not sterile, but clean, shiny, and hold it up. Can I do this? Without pausing or hesitating, I reach down with my left hand and stroke the skin around the pierced nipple. I can feel the tension from the needle below. I stroke and warm the flesh. And again, without pausing, I look down and with the blade in my right hand sketch, delicately, an arc across the skin. There is no pain. There's no feeling at all. I breathe and wait. Nothing. I breathe more. My hand trembles. Tension. Anxiety, fear. I remember Jim in the mirror, Vince on the floor, Walter in bed sick and frail, hardly able to talk or help himself. Do I cut again? I'm too tense. There's no blood because I can't relax. Tense, relax, tense, relax. There's no gravity. I'm lying down, tense, relax, tense, relax. I am holding my breath as I remember Jim in his hospital bed, his face gaunt. Walter at home holding my hand so hard it hurt. Tense, relax, love, trust, truth, relax. pressure, tense, relax, trust, truth. All the men I have loved, really loved in my life, are dead. I am here. I think about Vietnam and Jim and dead boys covered in blood. I think about the needle in my thumb, my panic. There is no blood. Tense. Relax. Tense. Relax. I stand up. Breathe. Tense. Relax. I look in the mirror on the wall across from the bed. The room is dark. I see Jim's picture on the wall above my desk. Walta watches from across the room. I feel hot and look again in the mirror. The arc is pink. Almost rose. I breathe. Tense. Relax. Suddenly the rose turns deeper. A lovely color. And almost imperceptibly, the new color emerges from the top of the arc and slowly travels to its end, as if by will alone, a single drop of crimson, scarlet, carmine blood forms and runs down my chest. It stops, and I stare at it in the mirror. I don't feel like a saint. I don't feel beautiful. I don't feel sexy. I just feel alive.
Calcutta by Bob Vickery from Best American Erotica 2000. Read by Stephen Hoy.
At 5 in the morning, I usually don't expect to run into anybody on the streets, which is fine with me. This is the time of day that I like the best, when most people are still in bed and the city is quiet. The streets take on a whole new feeling, peaceful, empty. The stores and cafes shut down, the yellow blinking traffic lights providing the only distraction. It's also my favorite time to work out. I belong to one of those 24-hour fitness centers, and at this time of day the place is almost empty. No lines for the weights, no guys waiting impatiently for you to wrap up your set. So, I'm just walking down the street toward the gym, enjoying the quiet, not thinking of anything in particular, when I notice this guy in a wheelchair on the corner ahead. I size him up in an eye blink. The torn Grateful Dead t-shirt, the long, ratty hair, the powerful arms, and no legs, just jeans pinned against the stumps of his thighs. When I pass him, I avoid eye contact, hoping to escape getting caught up in some little street encounter. Dream on. He reaches out and lightly touches my arm. "Hey, buddy," he says, "can you give me a minute to help me out?" "Shit," I think. I turn to him. "Sure. What's up?" The guy points up the block, which rises before us in a long, sloping hill. "I gotta catch a bus at the next street over," he says. "Can you give me a push up this hill?" Well, what am I going to do, leave him stranded there? "All right," I say. I get behind his wheelchair and start pushing. The guy twists around so that he's half facing me. "My name's Mike," he says. He holds out a hand to me that is large and none too clean. I shake it reluctantly, wedging my knee against the chair to keep it from rolling back. "I'm Paul," I say. Mike's grip is powerful, and I can feel a ridge of calluses rub against my palm. Looking at him more closely now, I can see how broad his shoulders are, how much his muscles bunch up beneath his t-shirt. I resume pushing Mike's chair, bending down and leaning forward, my face right above him. I get a whiff of something that isn't exactly roses, and I start breathing through my mouth. Pushing Mike is turning out to be a harder job than I expected. There's something wrong with the chair. It keeps swerving to the right, and the wheels keep getting stuck. Now I see where Mike got his biceps. "This chair's a piece of shit, isn't it?" Mike says, as if reading my mind. "It's pretty beat up," I agree. I got it from the VA hospital. I get to go there because I'm a Vietnam veteran. That's how I lost my legs, stepping on a fucking landmine 2 weeks before my tour of duty was over. Mike's tone of voice is conversational, almost cheerful. That's a tough break, I say, because I can't think of anything else to say. Mike gives a laugh without any bitterness. No shit. He jerks his thumb in the direction we're coming from. You know that Highway 80 overpass a few blocks away? Yeah? What about it? I slept under there last night. I'll probably sleep under there tonight, too. Why is he telling me all this stuff, I wonder? But it's pretty fucking obvious. I can smell a touch coming on a mile away. Why don't you just sleep in one of the shelters, I ask. Mike snorts. Those flea bags. I never go to those places. Only bums hang out there. I maintain a diplomatic silence. After a little while, we finally make it to the top. I wheel Mike next to the bus stop. Here you go, I say. Thanks, man, Mike says. He holds out his hand again, and again, reluctantly, I shake it. Only he doesn't let go when I try to pull away. Listen, Paul, he says, his voice suddenly low and urgent, his words coming out fast. I wonder if you could help me out with a little contribution. I'm trying to make it to the Y so that I can get a room and clean up. I smell like shit, I know that. Do you think I like being this dirty? Only they charge $25 for a room, and I'm kind of low on cash. My disability check isn't due for another week. Do you think you could spare a few bucks? I pull my hand out of Mike's grasp and clear my throat. Look, I say, I have a standing policy not to give money to panhandlers. Mike doesn't say anything. He just looks at me. His gray eyes narrowed. I mean, I give to charities, I say, talking faster. I belong to the United Way. I'm a member of the Sierra Club. It's just that I get hit up for money all the time, so I decided that I just wouldn't give any more money in the streets. Jesus, will you stop babbling? I think. I take a breath and look Mike in the face. I'm sorry. Mike shrugs. Don't be. He spins his chair around and wheels down the street. Thanks for the push, he says, over his shoulder. I watch his retreating back for a few moments and then turn and go to the gym. The place is almost deserted, just me and a couple of other guys in the weight room. I go through my routine quickly and efficiently, keeping my mind blank. There's some guy there I haven't seen before, a kid in his early 20s, blonde, milk-fed, downy-skinned, his body smooth and beautifully defined. I think of Mike, and the contrast between the two is grotesque. The guy asks me to spot him when he does his presses, and I lean over him, ready to catch the weight if I have to. His T-shirt is hiked up to his chest, and I check out the hard torso, the cut of the abs. A little later he returns the favor as I do my bench presses, and I catch a glimpse of the bulge in his jockstrap under his gym shorts. We talk, briefly. He tells me that his name is Jeff, and that he's a student at UC San Francisco. When I'm done with my workout, I go back to the locker room, strip, and enter the steam room. Except for me, the place is empty. I lean against the tile wall and close my eyes, listening to the hiss of the steam, feeling the rush of heat pour over my body. I hear the click of the steam room door open and close. After a couple of beats, I open my eyes again. Jeff is sitting on the bench across from me, naked, knees spread apart. He watches me intently as his dick slowly gets hard. After a pause, I reach over and slide my hand over his torso, feeling the hard muscles beneath my fingertips. Jeff hooks his hand around my neck and pulls my mouth against his. We play dueling tongues for a few seconds. I drop to my knees and slide my lips down his dick until my nose is mashed against his dark blonde pubes. Jeff lays his hands on either side of my head and starts pumping his dick in and out of my mouth. I suck on it greedily, my hands still exploring his torso. I find his nipples and twist them, not gently. Jeff groans. He pushes me back. "Stand up," he says, his voice urgent. I climb to my feet and stand before him, my arms at my side. My dick is as hard as dicks get. Jeff wraps his hand around it and starts stroking, his fist sliding rapidly up and down the shaft. He replaces his hand with his mouth, and I close my eyes, letting the sensation sweep over me. The steam hisses out of the vents and pours over my body, and I feel my sweat trickle down my face, my torso, my back. Jeff tugs gently on my balls as he deep-throats me. His hand wanders to my ass, squeezing the cheeks, burrowing into the crack, massaging my asshole. I feel my load get pulled up by his mouth, and one sharp thrust of my hips sends me over the edge. My body spasms, and I groan loudly. Jeff pulls my dick out of his mouth and jacks me off as I shoot, my load raining down onto his upturned face. And right at that moment, while the orgasm sweeps over me, the image of Mike's face floods my brain. "What the fuck?" I think. All I see is Mike, his narrowed eyes, his weather-beaten face, the stumps of his legs. I try to shake the image out of my head. Jeff is jerking off, and then he cries out as the sperm pulses out of his dick. I reach down and twist his nipple until he's done. We're silent for a few beats. "That was hot," Jeff finally says, grinning. "Yeah," I say absently. "Real hot." When I'm out on the street again, I walk back to the bus stop. If by some chance Mike is still there, I'll give him a couple of bucks. But the place is deserted. For the whole morning at work, I can't get Mike's face out of my mind. After a while, this gets annoying. What the fuck is this, I wonder? Some spasm of liberal guilt? At lunch, I leave the office to run a few errands. For some reason, I notice the street beggars more than I usually do. They're on every corner, squatting down in doorways or against newspaper racks or street lamps, their styrofoam cups in front of them along with their cardboard signs, hand-printed with their hard luck stories. Nobody gives these guys a dime. I don't either. I still think of Mike that evening while I wait in line to see a movie with my friend Tony. Tony's going on about some guy he's been dating, how this might turn into something. I listen patiently. Finally, when Tony winds down for a second, I clear my throat. "I had this weird encounter this morning," I say. "I can't get it out of my head." Tony looks at me expectantly. "Somebody hot?" he asks, grinning. The absurdity of Tony's comment makes me laugh. I shake my head. "It's nothing. Skip it." Tony continues talking about his new boyfriend. It doesn't take long before I'm sick of him, of the idea of spending the next few hours sitting next to him in a movie theater. I clear my throat. "Look, Tony," I say, "I'm sorry. I'm just not in the mood for a movie. Do you mind if I take a rain check?" The blood rushes up to Tony's face. "Hell yeah, I mind. We made plans. I drove to the city to do this." "I'm sorry," I say, "and I am. But all I want to do is get away." Tony leaves, none too graciously. I put my hands in my pockets and start walking. I'm in an upscale commercial district, the streets flanked by department jewelry and clothing stores, Macy's, Gump's, Saks, I. Magnin, and yet in every doorway figures are huddled under blankets and beat-up sleeping bags. I pass by a woman panhandling in front of Tiffany's, a small girl in her arms. The girl watches me with shrewd, bright eyes. "Where the fuck am I?" I think. "Calcutta?" When I reach my car, I climb into the driver's seat. I sit there for a long time, my hands grasping and ungrasping the steering wheel. "Shit," I mutter. I stick my key in the ignition and start up the car. My headlights make a tunnel of light under the highway overpass. Everything on either side of me is pure darkness. The only other light source is from a street lamp over a block away. I cruise down the street slowly, peering out the window, trying to make out the details of the forms I see lying on the pavement. My nerves are raw. I half expect some crack addict to pull out a Saturday night special and blow my head off. I finally spot Mike sitting in his wheelchair, wedged into a concrete corner. He squints into the headlights. I get out of my car. "Hi, Mike," I say. "Remember me?" Mike looks at me for a long time. "Sure," he finally says. "How you doing, Paul?" If he's surprised to see me, he doesn't show it. I talk fast before I have a chance to change my mind. "Look, if you want a place to spend the night, I can take you back to my apartment. I have a fold-out couch you can sleep on." Mike gives me a hard, shrewd look. A full 30 seconds of silence passes. "Okay," he finally says. I wheel him to the passenger side of the car and open it. He slides into the front seat with surprising agility. I open my trunk, and after a hard struggle, I get his rusty, beat-up, piece-of-shit wheelchair folded up. By the time I close the trunk, sweat is dripping down my forehead. We ride back in silence. I keep my mind blank. Every time a thought tries to rise to the surface, I push it down savagely. I don't speak to Mike until I've pulled into the garage of my apartment house. "There's no elevator," I say. "I'm going to have to carry you up the stairs." Mike regards me calmly, like we do this every day. "Okay," he says. Mike is not a small man, and I stagger up the stairs with him in my arms, praying to God that I don't drop him. Up close, the smell of stale sweat from his body is almost enough to make me gag. His torso under my arms is powerfully built. I think with grim amusement that he ought to rent out his wheelchair as a workout machine. I deposit him on the sofa and then go back down for his wheelchair. When I'm back in the apartment, Mike is the first to speak. "Mind if I take a bath?" he asks. "No problem," I say. I help him into the bathroom and turn on the faucets for the tub. Steam rises into the air. Mike peels off his clothes and drops them on the floor. His torso is packed with muscles. There's a tattoo on his left arm of a growling bulldog with USMC written underneath. The ink under his skin has started to run, blurring the image. A scar runs from his left pectoral down his side. Mike sees me staring at it.
"I got that in a knife fight with some coked-up street crazy," he says.
He lowers himself slowly into the tub.
"Sweet Jesus, that feels good," he groans.
I pick up his clothes. "I'm going down to the laundry room and throw these in a washing machine," I say. Mike is too busy soaping down to answer. When I come back, Mike is sitting naked in his chair, toweling himself dry. The water in the tub is several shades darker. I reach in and pull the plug and then throw Mike a terry cloth robe. "You want something to eat?" I ask. Mike looks at me with half-lidded eyes as he slips on the robe. What does it take to get a rise out of this guy, I wonder.
"Okay," Mike says.
Over dinner, Mike starts loosening up a little. He tells me about life on the streets, about the crazies he runs into, how he got his arm broken 4 years ago in a fight over his cash disability check, and how it never really healed right. It surprises me to realize that he's a handsome man. The skin around his eyes is puffy and his face is lined, but his features are regular, his mouth well-formed, his chin strong, his gray eyes fierce and intelligent. There's a no-bullshit direct way about him, stripped of self-pity. He laughs once over some story he's telling me about life on the streets, and in that instant he looks years younger. Shortly after dinner, I open up the sofa bed and make it up for Mike. "I'm going to bed," I say. "Let me know if you need anything." Mike shrugs off the robe and slips naked under the blankets. He folds his hands under his head, his biceps bunched up like meaty grapefruits.
"Why don't you hang around for a minute?" he says. "Keep me company."
He grins.
"These new surroundings have got me all wired."
His grin is so boyish and good-natured that I'm immediately suspicious. He doesn't look wired at all. If anything, he looks completely in control. Uneasiness floods over me.
"I don't know anything about this guy," I think. "What the fuck was I thinking of, bringing him into my apartment?"
Mike waits patiently, his eyes trained on me. I sit down next to him, my body rigid. He reaches up and squeezes my shoulder. I flinch.
"What's the matter?" he says. "Do I make you nervous?"
"Yeah," I say. "As a matter of fact, you do." We sit silently for a few beats, Mike's hand still kneading my shoulder. He pulls me down and we kiss, first gently and then with growing fierceness. Mike's tongue pushes deep into my mouth. I slide my hand across his furry chest, feeling the hard pectorals, the nipples. I pinch one and feel it swell. Mike sighs.
"Yeah," he says. "That's good. Play with my titty."
I lean forward and flick his nipple with my tongue, then nip it gently. Mike's body stirs. He reaches down and cups my crotch with his hand, giving it a squeeze. He pulls back and looks at me, his eyes hard and shrewd.
"Why don't you get naked?" he says.
I stand up and pull my clothes off as Mike watches.
This is fucking insane, I think.
But my dick is fully stiff and my heart is hammering hard enough to crack a rib. I can't remember when I felt this excited. When I'm naked, I slip into the bed next to Mike. He reaches over and pulls me against him, wrapping his huge arms around my torso. We kiss again as Mike presses our bodies together. I can feel his hard dick rub up against my belly. He increases the pressure of his hug, and I find myself struggling for breath. Mike's eyes gleam with a wolfish light, and suddenly I'm scared shitless. I'm a strong guy myself, but I can't break free. If Mike wanted to, he could snap my spine in two right now. But he just releases his grip, laughing.
"What was that all about?" I ask.
"Nothing," Mike says.
"I'm just fucking with you."
"Oh, yeah?" I say. I grab his wrists and pin his arms above his head. Mike doesn't resist, and his eyes gleam with amusement. But I don't kid myself that if this were a real brawl, I'd probably be fighting for my life right now.
"Why don't you just suck my dick for a while, tough guy?" I growl.
"Okay," Mike says, laughing. All of a sudden, he's as mild as a spring day. I release his wrists and sit up, pressing my thighs against Mike's torso. My dick sticks straight out, inches above his face. He opens his mouth, lifts his head, and I slide my dick in. His lips nibble down the shaft, and his tongue wraps around it. I don't stop until my balls are pressing against his chin. Mike takes it all like a trooper. I start pumping my hips, fucking his mouth in long, slow strokes. Mike twists his head from side to side, sucking on my dick with noisy gusto. He wraps his hands around my balls and tugs on them as his head bobs up and down. I reach back and start jacking him off. His dick feels meaty and thick in the palm of my hand, and the pre-cum that oozes out helps me slick it up nicely.
I whip off the blankets so that it's just our naked bodies on the bed with no covers to hide under. I want to see Mike's body. I pull back from him and sit at the foot of the bed. Mike shows no sign of self-consciousness. He lays there, his hands once again behind his head, watching me calmly as my eyes drink him in. I lean forward and run my hands over his arms, tracing the bulge of his biceps. I knead the muscles of his torso, feeling their hardness. The powerful pecs, the hard, furry abs. Then run my finger along the length of his scar, noting the texture of the rubbery red skin. I place my hands on his hips and slide them down over the stumps of his thighs, massaging the flesh. Mike's dick lies hard against his belly, twitching slightly, a drop of pre-cum oozing out of the head. Mike has a beautiful dick, red and meaty, thick, veined, the head flaring out. His balls hang low, covered with a light fuzz. I lean forward and press my face against them, breathing in their faint, musky smell. Feeling the hairs tickle my face, I open my mouth and suck them in, rolling the loose scrotal flesh around with my tongue. I look up, my mouth full of ball meat. Mike is watching me intently, his eyes narrowed, his eyebrows pulled down. I drag my tongue up the length of his dick and around the flared red head. I open my lips and slowly, inch by inch, I take Mike's dick full in my mouth, sucking on it, wrapping my tongue around it as my lips nibble down the shaft. Mike exhales deeply, the rasp of his breath a hairbreadth shy of a sigh. I start bobbing my head up and down, and Mike pumps his hips in sync with my mouth, thrusting his dick hard into my mouth with each downward swoop of my head. I run my fingers through the forest of hair on his chest and twist his nipples hard. This time Mike does groan, and when I glance at his face, I see the composure beginning to break, the eyes widening, the mouth opening as he breathes harder. Mike firmly grips my head with both hands and starts plowing my mouth in earnest, his thrusts hard and deep. With a sudden, quick movement, he pivots us around, so that I'm on my back now, with Mike straddling my chest. His huge hands grip my temples with greater pressure now, and the head of his cock is banging against the back of my throat like it's knocking on heaven's door. This suits me fine. I can't get enough of his dick in my mouth. I'm feeding on it like a shark on chum. I reach behind and grab his ass cheeks, feeling their muscularity, how they relax and harden with each thrust of his dick. Mike's face looms over me, his lips spread wide in a savage grin. "I would really love to fuck that pretty ass of yours, baby," he growls. I pull his dick out of my mouth and return his grin. "Just hold that thought," I say. I slip out of bed, make a run to the bathroom, and return with a condom and a jar of lube. Mike leans back, propped up on his arms, as I roll the condom down his dick. I give my hand a liberal squirt of the lube and grease his dick up good. Mike pushes me back under the bed and hoists my legs over his powerful shoulders. He works his dick into my asshole with killing patience, inch by slow inch. I push my head against the pillow and close my eyes. When he's full in, Mike just lays motionless on top of me for a few beats. He looks down at me and grins. "I just want my dick and your asshole to get acquainted first," he says, "before they start dancing." I laugh. Mike begins to grind his hips, slowly at first, almost imperceptibly, and then with increasing thrust. It doesn't take long before he's giving my ass a savage pounding, his balls slapping against me. I throw my head against the pillow. "Oh, yeah," I groan. Mike bends down and plants his mouth over mine.
his tongue thrusting back in as his dick works its way deep into my ass. I match him stroke for stroke, squeezing my ass tight against his dick, matching his rhythm. My heels dig in between his shoulder blades, and my hands hold onto his hips for perches. We're both working up a sweat now. Drops trickle down Mike's face and splatter on me, mingling with my own sweat. Mike's chest is heaving, and his breath comes out in ragged gasps. He pauses long enough to squirt a dollop of lube on his hand and starts jacking me off. It doesn't take long before my groans are mingling with his. Mike's teeth are bared, and with each thrust of his hips, his grunts become louder and more drawn out. Finally, he shoves his dick in hard and cries out. I feel his body shudder, and he leans down and kisses me hard as the orgasm sweeps over him. Mike's greased strokes on my dick never slow down, and it's just a matter of seconds before I'm groaning and squirting my load out as well, the thick drops splattering against my chest and belly. Mike collapses on top of me, smearing his body with my cum. I feel his chest rise and fall, and we kiss again. He pulls his softening dick out of my ass and nestles against me, his face nuzzling my neck. After a couple of minutes, he starts snoring. I drift off to sleep soon afterwards. I wake up early the next morning and get dressed for work. Mike is still asleep. My mind is full of ideas. Contacting social agencies, finding Mike some kind of permanent place to stay, getting him off the streets. After a while, Mike wakes up. His eyes follow me around the room. "I'll be leaving for work in a few minutes," I say. "You're welcome to stay here a while longer." Mike shakes his head.
"Once you leave, I won't be able to get out. You'll have to carry me down those stairs."
I stop and look at him. "Why don't you just stay here for the day? When I get back, we can talk about figuring some way of finding you a place to stay." Mike smiles.
"Thanks. But I got things to do."
I carry him down to the sidewalk outside, set him on the stoop, and get his wheelchair. "I'll be back from work around 5:30, I say. "You gonna be here?" Mike shrugs.
"Yeah, sure."
He's not there when I return that evening. Somehow I'm not surprised, though I stay indoors in case he shows up. Later I drive by the overpass, but he's not there either. Every evening for a couple of weeks I make a ritual of cruising under the overpass, searching out in the dim light for a figure in a wheelchair. I never find him. Maybe the thought of some do-gooder trying to get him off the streets is so abhorrent to Mike that he's moved on to another place where he can't be found. Eventually, I give it up. But I can't get the son of a bitch out of my head. It's not lust or pity. It certainly isn't love. I don't know what the fuck it is. But Mike, wherever you are, hustling passers-by with your will-you-push-my-wheelchair-for-me routine, I hope you're doing what you want to do. And I wish you luck, man. I wish you luck.
Sink by Matthew Bernstein Sycamore from Best American Erotica 2001. Read by Stefan Rudnicki.
My eyes rolled back, and I was looking in the mirror the way I used to look at people late, late, late at clubs when the drugs were taking me to that planet I never wanted to leave. But this time it was just me and the bathroom sink. That's when our relationship began. 2 months and still going strong. It's the second longest relationship I've ever had. And this one doesn't have any of the drama. He's kind of falling apart, but he's dependable and beautiful in the way that only a sink can be beautiful. And he's got character. This isn't some Formica mess from the 70s with square edges and gold glitter. And it's not one of those sinks that looks all glamorous from a distance, but then you get up close and the drain's rusted shut, the faucets are about to break off. This sink is the real thing. made during the 40s. You know, the golden years. Sure, he's seen a little wear and tear, but haven't we all? I mean, I'm only 24, and I've got suitcases under my eyes. It all started one night after a trick. He wanted me to fuck him hard, harder, and after a few thrusts, it actually started turning me on. I was pounding him as hard as I could, and he was grabbing my ass to pull my dick in farther. That got me to relax. I mean, I don't like fucking someone really hard unless I know he's enjoying it. So I put my hands on his back and got into a good rhythm, sliding my dick almost all the way out and shoving it back in as far as it would go. It got to the point where his moans and my grunts were synchronized, which kind of put me in a trance. I think I even heard my ball slapping against his ass like in some porn video. I could feel myself getting close to coming, so I stopped and held my dick all the way in his ass. But I started spasming anyway. Usually I don't like to come with guys who are paying me, and there's nothing worse than coming when I'm trying not to. It's like doing bad drugs, makes me tense instead of euphoric. But somehow this time, I managed to hold it in, even though I thought for a second that I could feel my cum spilling into the condom. Either the trick thought I was coming too, or our bodies were really in tandem, which would be kind of scary. But anyway, he started gasping, and then he moved forward quickly, and my dick slid out, and then he came. I was covered in sweat, so I took a shower while he called a taxi. Got home, and I was exhausted. Then, of course, I got horny. I always get horny when I think I'm too tired to move. I couldn't stop thinking about fucking some sweaty guy with a shaved head and a firm body, pounding his asshole and digging my fingers into the groove between his chest muscles until we came at the same time. He'd reach back and grab my ass to keep my dick in his asshole longer, my arms around him, tongue reaching for the back of his throat. I got hard just thinking about it, the kind of hard that makes me think my dick might explode. Not like when I'm about to come, but like, isn't this thing too red? I went into the bathroom to watch myself jerk off in the mirror. My dick was so hard it was vibrating. I pulled off my shirt and grabbed my armpits, licked the mirror in circles like I was making out with someone, or maybe just to see what it would taste like. The mirror got all foggy. I spit on my hand and started pumping my dick into both my fists, trying to watch myself while licking one of my armpits, which was tastier than the mirror. I remembered Greg calling me up one night to tell me shea butter was the best lube, so I rubbed some between my hands and then onto my dick, started thrusting my dick against the rounded top of the sink without hands. I pulled the shea butter back out of the cabinet and rubbed it onto the sink. Felt great, but the sink still wasn't slippery enough. I opened the cabinet again and took out some of this sticky vitamin E lotion that I use as pomade. Then I went into the other room and got some Bodywise Silk, the British lube that feels like lotion, and I mixed all three together. My dick felt harder than rock hard. Granite hard, marble hard. I looked in the mirror, and my face was what my mother used to call lobster red. Started pushing down on my dick so there was more friction, sliding all the way out past the cockhead and then back toward the faucet. Each time my dick slipped off the sink, I'd jerk off until I could tell by the look on my face that I was about to come. Then I'd grab the sink with my hands and start pumping faster. I wanted to come without using my hands, like my dick was in someone's ass and I was pulling him against me. I got really close, and then my dick slipped off again. I started pounding the sink as hard as I'd been pounding that trick, my thighs making noise. More noise than before, because porcelain echoes. It felt good to squeeze the sink with my thighs, balancing my weight on top and thrusting hard, concentrating to keep my dick from slipping off. Pushing down on my dick with my hands so I'd get closer to coming. By this time I was moaning, pounding the sink and sweating. And then I slipped again. Held my dick and smacked it against the sink until it felt as stiff as the sink. Sink hard. Then I grabbed onto the sides of the sink with my hands and pushed on the front with my thighs, thrusting fast now. Hard and fast, and then sliding slowly back until my cock almost slipped off, then pounding again. I was concentrating so hard that I didn't even think of fantasizing, thrusting my dick faster and faster, and when I came, I felt like I'd split apart. It sure feels sexy to squeeze my thighs up against that sink. The sink feels so strong. I can trace the rough spots where the enamel's chipped, but I know the sink's not going to break, even if there are some dark areas and the white is fading to yellow. This sink was built to last. I can press down with all my weight and it doesn't even budge. That's firmer than any guy's six-pack. Let me tell you that the sex I have with my sink is a lot better than most of the sex I've had with other guys. My sink's not going to tease my asshole with his dick, then slide it in without a condom, or leave in the morning before I even have a chance to say goodbye. Sure, I wish the sink were more responsive, but you can't have everything, right? Okay, maybe you think I'm in denial about the fact that when I'm having sex with my sink, I'm really masturbating. So if you want me to use the word masturbation, I'll use it. Let's just call it masturbation with a partner. I mean, plain old masturbation was never this exciting. I don't always fuck the sink. That's for special occasions. But I love to press the shaft of my dick against the top of the sink while I grab my abs with one hand and my balls with the other. And sometimes I lean against the sink while I slide a dildo into my ass. I can feel the sink warming against my thighs. I always used to press my dildo against the wall and then slide onto it. But now I've got lots of variations. The other day I put the dildo up on the sink, stood on the edge of the bathtub, and sat on the dildo. I watched myself right up against the mirror. I could see my facial muscles relax as I got closer to coming. Then when I came, I shot all over myself and almost fell into the sink, which was funny and almost romantic. Usually, though, I shoot right into the drain and then just wash my cum down, though now the drain's starting to clog. And I can't seem to get that vitamin E lotion off the edge of the sink. Even when I wash it with soap, it still feels a bit slimy. My friends are going to read this, and they're going to want to use the kitchen sink, but oh well. The view is one of the most important parts. When I'm jerking off in the sink, I'm right up against the mirror. Sometimes I can pretend that I'm watching that Warhol movie I've never seen, the one that's just Joe D'Alessandro jerking off from the waist up. I can watch all the different expressions on my face, study my eyes, watch my jaw clench or slacken as I come and my eyes roll back. The sink makes me feel good about myself. There's nothing getting in the way of my body becoming my own object of desire. I look in the mirror and think, "Who's that hot boy?" I tease my tits until they pop up, bite my armpits, smack my chest as hard as I can, and watch the red marks as they fade. That first time I fucked my sink, I realized how butch I get when I'm about to come. My face curls up almost into a snarl, and I start groaning like some fuck track. I've been working out, and I can watch my body developing. Balancing my hard-on against the sink, I study my new muscles. How hard are the pecs? Are my biceps still bigger than my triceps? I stand up on the toilet so I can see my legs, bend over to look at my ass. Rubbing my hand down over my abs, feeling the hills and valleys as I move from one muscle to another, all the while grinding my dick and getting hornier and hornier. For myself. It's funny. Now I start to get horny every time I'm standing in front of the sink. When I'm shaving, I press forward and I get hard. I'm moving to New York soon, though, and I'm worried that my new sink just won't be the same. It couldn't be this good. And what if I get a sink with sharp edges?
Sunday, by Dan Taulapapa McMullen. From Best American Erotica 2001. Read by Myron Willis.
There was a seminary student from Samoa. His parents escorted him to Minnesota. He was the first Samoan Lutheran seminary student. There are Mormons, Catholics, Congregationalists all over Samoa. But he was the first Lutheran. His parents stood on either side of him in the middle of Nicollet Mall on a summer day, in the same spot where Mary Tyler Moore threw her hat into the air. The Reverend Narfson came out of his cathedral at the north end of the mall. Approaching the three Polynesians, he suddenly smiled. Winter was so far away. somewhere among the gargoyles. Such warm, happy people, was his first thought. I shall treat Polly as I treat my own son, the assistant reverend. The Reverend Narfson told Mr. and Mrs. Sal Lafalio Tainamauga, taking Polly's moist brown hand and touching it to his dry cheek. Mr. and Mrs. Sal Lafalio Tainamauga beamed smiles like tropic birds floating slowly across their high faces. Mr. Sal Lafalio Tainamauga, staunch as the size of Savai, and Mrs. Sal Lafalio Tainamauga, a single column of devotion and prayer. Take care of our boy. Polly, 6'5", looked down at the 5'5" reverend. I will, said the reverend, and lowered his head in a few words of thanksgiving, while his eyes traced the ascending lines of Polly's thighs. Summer in Minnesota was hot and green. Then, as happens annually in Minnesota during the third week of October, winter descended swiftly with snow and ice. Christmas came and went. Polly was invited to spend part of winter break with the Reverend Narfson and his son Greg, the assistant pastor. Polly wondered about the rumor that Greg and the Reverend were not actually related by blood, but by common interest, as he noted the difference in physical appearance during the first sauna the three of them took together. In fact, the three of them were sitting naked in the pastor's basement within 15 minutes of Polly's arrival, coming into the house after the drive from the seminary in town with Greg. The pastor, bounding down the stairs in his bathrobe, invited Polly to join them for their afternoon, invigorating Swedish sauna. Before you could say, oofta, Polly was on a high pine bench, pouring spring water from a wooden dipper, watching eucalyptus-scented steam rise between him and his nude hosts. Polly wore a towel, having been brought up a modest Christian Samoan. I would have thought that being Polynesian, said the pastor, plumbing his bottomless well of ignorance, you wouldn't have hang-ups about nudity and such things. We were brought up never to swim on Sundays, and always to wear a t-shirt to the beach, answered Polly. Oh, how we must have fucked you poor bastards up the ass, moaned the pastor, standing on floor level and looking into the shadow under Polly's towel, thinking of missionaries. Polly took a moment to ponder this. His embarrassment at the casual nudity forced him to keep his eyes above the pastor's jawline, and he refused to acknowledge Pastor Narfson's erection. From the pastor's pale, boyish body, with its slim hips and small ass, there, curving upward toward his chest, sat a great, fat, colorless prick that glistened around the head as precum dribbled onto the blonde floor. Actually, most of the Christian missionaries to Samoa came from Rarotonga, was Polly's response. The pastor tweaked the head of his prick, making it pink, and coated the round shaft with a palm full of stuff. The smallness of the pastor's torso made the long curve of his hard-on all the more incredible. But Polly's discretion was boundless. Even a stiff dick with a heartbeat trembling between his ankles in the steam, would not alter his respectful attention to his mentor's words. The pastor sat down on the bench at Polly's feet with a sigh. Greg, why don't you do your exercises? He suggested. Greg was not immune to the charms of the pastor's member. It was the pastor's one physically alluring quality. But today, he felt shy around Polly. Rather than taking the pastor's hidden cue, he began instead to actually exercise. Greg started with stretches. He sat on the high bench opposite Polly. Spreading his legs, he touched his fingers to the tips of his toes. The sauna was quiet with only the sound of Greg's breathing and the creaking bench, and Pastor Narfson's yanking. Greg and the pastor together glanced at the dark brown nipples on Pally's broad chest, softening in the heat. Pally looked curiously at Greg. He was as tall as Pally, and as broad-shouldered. While the pastor was narrow, Greg had thick thighs.